The Charging Sky by In Effort, read by Katrina Swift. There are some fairy tales that go untold, some stories that never have an audience to cheer and stand at curtain call, some characters that stay unknown to the world, and some sentiments that never leave the page. Once upon a time, there was an angel and a pair of brothers. Destinies were written for all three of them, but they wouldn't know it until it was too late. And isn't that how it always goes? When Dean is 6, he notices that he is different than the other kids at school, his own brother even. You see, Dean has these things that look suspiciously like wings when he can see them. Think Big Bird, but less yellow, more off-white, and human-sized. And Dean's got an imagination on him, but even this is too much for it. So he tells his dad, and his dad laughs. Then he tells his mom, and she mimics his response, but it's kinder, and they end the conversation with her calling him her angel always, a crown of hair nestled under her chin as she tucks him neat into bed. And then there's Sam. Sam, who's 4 and can't really be expected to have an opinion one way or another, but turns out the little rugrat does anyway. Because when he cries, Dean at first, middle of the night and darkness all around, he sees them too. Bird. He giggles, and his brother sits up beside him, rolls an eye, and keeps the other stationed behind him as they unfold and wrap around them both. Yeah, Sammy, I'm a damn bird. Sam smiles honest white into the din, closes his eyes, and falls asleep, the first secret they share, right here, right now. Dean will be the only one who remembers. Later, he figures, just as well. If you look close enough, upon reviewing your past, you will notice things that you never noticed the first time around, that you weren't ready to see then, and your history takes on a clearer light as everything is illuminated in hindsight. As he grows older, he gets better at compartmentalizing it. He gets better at compartmentalizing a lot, actually, and it isn't until he's 11, with a bit more than the standard chip on his shoulder, that he is forced to face it again. A new boy gets transferred into his class, red-headed and freckles ripe against his skin as he takes the seat beside him. Cass, the boy speaks. It's short for something stupid. Dean, he returns. It's short for Dean. This is his best friend, the only one he'll ever have. This is the divine intervention in its most cliched definition. They exchange baseball cards, do all things other kids their age do, and nothing about this picture is out of the ordinary at all. Except for, you know, the fact that they can fly. There's that. We're special, you and me, and the world looks a whole lot smaller on the roof, Dean dangling his legs into the space over the edge, as the other boy keeps himself a safe distance from it, but peers over just the same. You don't say. Cass ignores the sarcasm. He knows it for what it is, Dean's way of keeping his heart from bursting right out of his chest, fear of the unknown, something he has to face, been facing, but wishes he didn't. Smiles instead while Winchester rolls his eyes. You betcha. A moment later, the air rises between them, gravity nothing they have to worry about, and then they jump, float off into the sky, itching for the sun. One day he disappears, drops right off the face of the fucking earth, and Dean's kind of pissed, kind of sad, lots confused, so he goes. Marches right up into the office that is like a second home of the worst kind, and asks just where the punk moved to. The secretary gives him an odd look. He shrugs it off. And then, the second time, he does the same, but his hands aren't as steady against the reception now. She tells him in one of those slow, patronizing voices all adults inevitably have, that there has never been a cast registered in his class, in the entire school even, and Dean stands there. For a whole damn minute, stands and blinks fast before promptly running out the same way he came in. So that's that. He doesn't tell anyone because imagining entire people up is the sort of crazy that gets you sent to places with bad food and white walls for company. A mirror before him, he stands straight, lets them out to breathe, spanning half the room, and Dean wishes it, whatever this is, away, wishes someone would take them away. When he opens his eyes again, he gets just that. He tells himself that slippery shine in his eyes and to his cheeks is from the surprise, the joy at finally being heard. He tells himself. Sam grows up. Dean too, but not the same way Sammy does. Sam brings home A's and soft-spoken girls who don't do anything before marriage, so they say. Dean smarts off to just about everyone he meets and hides letters with things like suspension and final warning typed in neat black font from Dad. And Mom's dead. Mom's dead. To top it off, he's got these dreams about her, white sails whipping high behind and a glow that can't be described as anything but holy. He gets them a lot. He doesn't tell anyone about them either. He's getting real good at that, keeping secrets, driving them deep enough to ignore when he needs to, when it counts. There are other dreams, too, the one where he gets back exactly what he hoped away. He doesn't have them nearly as much as he wants to, but he likes that there is at least the memory, that maybe now he can say with a touch of honesty that it really was all a dream. But mostly he thinks he's crazy. Maybe he is. He probably is. Probably. When Dean was 6, he thought he could fly. Just like everyone else. He thought he was invincible, untouchable, one more cut above the rest of mankind. Turns out he was. When Dean is 20 and counting, he flies over the city he grew up in, flies over the houses he never went over to after school, book bag never slung over his shoulder because it was in his locker, and finds Sam, stuck in a fire, frozen in the quick slap of history trying to go for two, and when they're up, out over the world, the sight of it dropping away fast, he doesn't say a thing. Neither of them do, because Dean knows why now. He knows why because Sam is alive and Sam has always been his answer, the only one that ever made sense. Later, a voice in his head says, "Now. Now you understand." And Dean's grin slides open, half asleep and all awake. "Yeah, I do." The next day, Dean leaves his mortal coil. Leaves because he has done what was needed to be done in this form, and with the clouds on his right, he sees the punk with the red hair, new body, same sure smile, and they watch over his Sam together. "Don't worry about him. He knows you're still here." When the wind finds his face, the voice in his head tells him there's work to be done, and he's ready now. Dean listens.